think of what I feel committed to, I automatically think of my family and good friends, of course. But I also think of some of the ideals and the values that I cherish. Social justice and equity, compassion, and optimism, even in the face of fear. Declaring these values is one thing, but committing to them, that requires action. I found this quote from an anonymous author. "Commitment means staying loyal to what you said you were going to do long after the mood you set it in has left you." That's a good point. But there is also commitment to community. Now that I can really get behind. During my adult life, I've always known the value of community, and I've written about it many times in my professional role as a health promoter. But my personal commitment to community was strengthened when my kids were very small and our family joined a local parent participation preschool called Countryside. I admit that the first few months of in the life of our daughter, Bridget, were a bit of a blur. Our son, Jonah, had just turned 2 and had decided he never wanted to nap again, and he never did. We had recently moved to the town of Brentwood Bay, and we had no family nearby to help. I struggled each day to care for our newborn, an active, sleep-deprived toddler, and find time for myself and my partner, too. It was a challenging time, and I think that was when I started seeing chocolate as a food group. There were many days when it felt like a major success when everyone was just fed and watered. Then, thank goodness, we found Countryside. At a cooperative preschool like Countryside, the families run the school. We helped in the classroom. We took part in monthly parent education events. We prepared snacks for the kids, cleaned the toys and other materials, planned large annual gatherings. We handled new registrations, the school's finances, and we negotiated leases and contracts, all with the guidance and the love of our wonderful early childhood educator, who is none other than our very own Nancy Dobbs. Together, our parent group made decisions, we worked through conflicts, we had fun together, and celebrated successes. We built a deep sense of connection with one another and through cooperating and running the school. And that connection grew beyond the borders of the preschool. If my child was sick or had some other kind of emergency, I knew that I had many other parents to call. What an incredible gift. If I hadn't committed to that role, that responsibility of being a Countryside parent, if I hadn't jumped in with both feet, as my father would say, I wouldn't have experienced that sense of togetherness that came from each of us being committed. Committed not just to our preschool community, but to each other. Through committing to community, I gave a piece of myself, but that experience helped me to find my place in the world. I became part of something important, and together we built a loving, compassionate environment in which our families thrived. That environment, in turn, supported me to become more of who I am. It allowed my family and me to have a safe place to come, to be, and to become. And it supported me to be strong and brave in making further commitments, like the commitment I made this morning to this community when I jumped in with both feet to be your worship associate today.
The choose the sermon topic of your choice selection for me this year came from Andy Lee. He asked me to speak about what a Unitarian Universalist interpretation of a passage from the Gospel of Matthew would look like and mean in our daily living. Here is the passage from Matthew, chapter 22, verses 37 to 40. Jesus said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." The second reading is from Quaker teacher and theologian Douglas Steer. This quotation was one used for a year-long study that all Unitarian Universalist ministers went through. Our study was entitled, Whose Are We? Steer writes, "The ancient question, who am I, inevitably leads to a deeper one, whose am I? Because there is not identity outside of relationship. You cannot be a person by yourself. To ask, whose am I, is to extend the question far beyond the little self-absorbed self and wonder, who needs you? Who loves you? To whom are you accountable? To whom do you answer? Whose life is altered by your choices? With whose life, whose lives, is your own all bound up inextricably in obvious or invisible ways? Whose am I? Whose are we? The commandments of our lives. None of us like being told what to do. For adults, it doesn't happen that often, but any time we feel the slightest pressure or push to do things in a prescribed or advised way, well, let's just say we will most likely react with resistance. Don't you tell me what to do! Which means the word commandment is not one of our favorites. Just the word itself sounds and feels like a demand. You should. You must. For Unitarians who dislike authority on a good day, let's just say we're not likely to respond well to any commandment. And one about loving God? Oh boy. So let's pull it apart a bit and see where we end up. Because as Andy said in his request of me, we Unitarians tend to do pretty well with that second commandment, to love our neighbors as ourselves. But that first one, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. And the fact that Matthew says that that is the first and great commandment, Andy said, well, you know, maybe that's not just fiddle faddle that we're supposed to just skip right over that one. Maybe we need to sit and look at it a little bit. So let's do that. First, let's look at that notion of commandment. One of the things that I most admire about the monotheistic traditions, the Abrahamic faiths, if you will, that I think we Unitarian Universalists would do well to learn from Islam and Judaism and Christianity, is their deep sense of devotion and service to an ultimate purpose and call. If you translate the Arabic word Islam, you will find that it means submission. We are not a people of submission. And we see it mostly in a negative, if not a pejorative, light. And yet, as Douglas Steer's quotation reminds us, we are responsible, beholden, and accountable to so much and so many. You may not see it as submission as such, but each of us is deeply accountable. We are already, in some ways, commanded. Our being and our identity is created in relation to everyone, from our ancestors to our friends, to our spouses, to our children if we have them, and to our global human community. Our lives and our choices are already embedded in a web of connections that both hold us and ask a great deal of us. We can try to duck this truth, and I think we do with some frequency, but I would contend that we are all commanded. We have all said yes to many commandments in the ways that we have connected to other human beings throughout our lives. We are already responsible. Then there's the God part. As Andy pointed out to me, most of us, regardless of our theology, can really get behind how we feel we are responsible for others. But what about that ultimate kind of relationship? We like this notion of loving our neighbors as ourselves, and yet that rule in and of itself, that golden rule, is not as easy or as simple as it may sound. So we may like that second commandment until we don't. We spend our entire lifetimes trying to be more loving more of the time with all people. It's right up there in degree of difficulty with respecting the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And these values hold the most value when they are challenging, do they not? It is easy to love your neighbor if they are highly agreeable and friendly and respectful. But we don't get to choose our neighbors. So they may be difficult. They may be cold or rigid or loud or hold dramatically different political views from our own. Loving the neighbor as oneself is easy, as I said, until it isn't. And let's face it, a lot of us aren't so good at loving ourselves. So loving your neighbor as yourself might not be so great a barometer. I'm wondering if actually the commandment would be better said, "Thou shalt grow in thy ability to love." We will grow in our ability to love ourselves, to love others, and especially those who we find it hardest to feel love toward. Thou shalt grow in thy ability to love. My colleague in D.C. used to say that the purpose of church was to learn how to love better. For those who don't believe in God, that first commandment, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind, what might that mean if you are not a theist to you? I would say the question for you becomes, what do you offer that kind of love in a way that feels ultimate? When you feel in touch with a sense of the essence or core of what it means to be alive, how do you love that? When you feel a sense of oneness or awe or beauty, how do you love or express gratitude for that knowing? That is the first commandment. An acknowledgement of the moments when I see my being in its place in the universe and affirm it and can offer love and gratitude for the part that I play in the whole. The first commandment, you could say, for those of you who do not believe in God, is about loving life itself. For those of us who do believe in God, it is perhaps more simple, but no less difficult. It means seeking connection with the holy and offering thanks and love with your whole being to the divine being for presence and possibility. So for those of you who do believe in God, how do you offer God thanks? How do you listen for God's guidance or see and sense God's presence? How does God show up in how you relate to others and how you relate to yourself? This all brings me back to that quotation from Douglas Steer, because there is not identity outside of relationship, he writes. You cannot be a person by yourself. To ask, whose am I, is to extend the question far beyond the little self-absorbed self and wonder, who needs you? Who loves you? To whom are you accountable? Whose life is altered by your choices? And my favorite sentence, with whose life or whose lives is your own all bound up inextricably in ways obvious or invisible? The quotation asks us to think about what pulls at us, what and who asks us to show up and care and be and do. I find that at the times that I am tempted to feel hopeless or to recede so far into myself that I forget the other calls and connections of my life, the thing that I most need to do is listen to gospel music. My most recent visit to D.C., we were closing out this service that I had done, and the Jubilee Singers, which is the informal choir in that congregation, the group of people who are singers, the group of people who cannot read music, just like me, but who just love to sing their hearts out. They got up at the end of that service, and I had recessed down the aisle. I was at the back of the sanctuary, and they started up on this song by the Clark Sisters. I invite you to go look them up. They got some good tunes. And the Clark Sisters wrote a song called Looking for a Miracle. And I don't know about you, but I think we could be looking for some miracles nowadays, because the headlines aren't full of much that feels very hopeful. And so there was this choir full of folks, lots of different ages, different races, different everything. And they got up and they started to sing. I'm looking for a miracle. I expect the impossible. I feel the intangible. I see the invisible. The sky is the limit to what I can have. And because it's a gospel song, you got to go, oh, 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 yeah. The sky is the limit to what I can have. The sky is the limit to what I can have. And then they said, then the soloist said, I believe and receive it that God will perform it today. And I said, woo, okay. I believe and receive it that God will perform it today, right? And then they got to the end of the song, and the soloist, Nicole, who will just sing your heart out, she said, I believe in miracles every day. God will make a way out of no way. I believe in miracles every day. God will make a way out of no way. I said, well, okay, girlfriend. I believe in miracles every day that God will make a way out of no way, which is something black folk talk about all the time. God will make a way out of no way. And when I don't believe, I need a song that says, I'm looking for a miracle. I expect the impossible. I feel the intangible. I see the invisible. Because that's where it is right now. What's the intangible? What's the invisible that we're not seeing? That just might save us. When I am in a grumpy place, when I get to that word have in that song, the sky is the limit to what I can have. Ooh, well, I'm like, yeah, the sky is the limit to what I can have. And then I'm like, wait a minute, to what I can have? What I can have? Shouldn't it be like the sky is the limit to what I can feel or what I can believe? But when I let go and I don't try to analyze and I let the song speak to my heart, I realize that the have is not about objects or even accomplishments. It rarely is in gospel music. It is sometimes, but it rarely is. It's a sense of well-being or possibility or an embrace of life and people. The sky is the limit to what I can have. Whoa, yeah, 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 yeah. The sky is the limit to what I can have. She's not talking about a car. I'm talking about a house. The sky is the limit to what my soul might embrace, to whom I could love. The commandment is much bigger than any object. And of course, for these groups like the Clark Sisters, it's about the connection to God and the connection to Christianity. But that, if that is not your thing, you can still connect to the emotion of this music. The uplift and the catharsis and the hopefulness. And yes, next month's theme of resilience. You cannot listen to gospel music and feel like you can't get up tomorrow. You just can't. Because if they could have seen what they have seen and still tell you the sky is the limit, then surely there's some truth somewhere to that. Our lives are moved and informed and transformed by all that pulls on us, commands us to connect with what is beyond us as individual selves. Our individual selves need nourishing and need love. We need to believe in our own worth. And we all struggle with that to varying degrees. Some of us immensely. But once we are grounded in that self-regard and esteem, we have to give some of it away. That's what a commandment is to me. We have to give some of that we find within ourselves. We have to give some of it away. I heard someone this week quote activist Brittany Packnett saying to a bunch of white folks, you have to spend your privilege. And I like that idea of all of us have stuff to spend in terms of things to give from our beings. So what does all this have to do with integrity? You wonder, you know, just listening to Shauna singing some gospel music, that's all fun. But what does it all mean? That's what my father used to say to me all the time. But what does it all mean, Chana? People, I love the word integrity, because integrity has to do with people and things that hold together. Something that has integrity coheres. It's whole. And when we are clear about what and whom our lives are committed to, we make decisions and we act in ways that uphold our beliefs. I have heard it said that if you believe in God, the question is what kind of person you are because of that belief. Similarly, if you don't believe in God, what impact does that have or not have on who you are and how you are in the world? Simply put, the truest test of one's beliefs is what they make of you. I want to close with a bit of a guided meditation. So I invite you to get comfortable in your seat. Close your eyes if you're willing to. And to think for a moment about what Matthew's gospel, which means good news, might mean for you at this moment in your life. What do you love with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind? How does that love that you are picturing now call to you? To whom does that love connect you? And how might you, as you move about the most ordinary and mundane parts of your days, how might that love infuse those moments? What kind of person does that love call you to be? With that love in your heart, aware of its command upon you, of the way that it prods you forward and outward and deeper into your life, I invite you to hold fast to that love, to take another deep breath or two, feeling that love move through you and within you. And then to rise in body or spirit to sing about making channels for those streams of love.